This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
I'm great. I've been laughing out loud since about 4 a.m. I got to get my act together.
Because, go ahead. What's the matter?
What's funny, I hate to say this, it has nothing to do with the ACC.
That's correct.
But I've been laughing out loud. And I hope my wife, I know Amy's got to be up. Because, I mean, I've been laughing like my sides hurt.
Yeah.
Watching Brian Kelly, the new coach at LSU, give us a new Southern accent. And I'm telling you, he will do a fine job. He's a great coach. Yep. They'll win a bunch of games. And I said on radio, watching Brian Kelly in that culture will be more entertaining than watching LSU football. And it started last night with the introduction. And if you haven't seen it, you want a good laugh to start your day, knock yourself out. All of a sudden, this guy comes down one day in Louisiana, and I can't even recognize him. He turned into Ed Orgeron like overnight. I'm like, what happened here? What happened? Great night for our Tigers. What happened to Brian Kelly? Oh my God! It is. Wait till radio this afternoon. I will save it for radio. Okay. But I mean,
you'll play some clips on radio.
Oh,
okay. Goodness. Just checking.
The family is like, what happened
is that
to
three
Brian
syllables?
Kelly? What happened to Brian Kelly? Sophisticated, no nonsense.
Yeah, right.
Straightforward,
businesslike. He goes CEO, down to
Louisiana,
IBM.
24 hours in Louisiana. It's just like, where did he go? What happened? Oh, it's vintage classic stuff. But that's for radio this afternoon. We got stuff to do. It's an important
holy
day
cow,
show.
We got a ton of guests in here. Coming up, bottom of the hour. I mean, like bottom of the hour, like 7:30 bottom of the hour. The mayor of Deektown's going to be here.
Yes, he is.
John Kelly, John Curry.
John Curry Kelly. Would be.
Yeah.
Not Brian Kelly.
Brian Kelly's at LSU.
He's part of the family.
John Curry.
Great day to be a Tiger.
Athletics director at Wake Forest. Friend of the show. Look forward to having him here. Deacon's in Pittsburgh, obviously, tomorrow night in the Subway ACC Football Championship. And then that's not all. Heather Like, his colleague, top of the 8 o'clock hour, joins us from Pittsburgh. We'll talk about these two schools and the momentum that their football programs have given, not to just their athletics department, but also their institutions as well. David Teal will join us at 8:30. And then at 9 o'clock, the commissioner of the Atlantic Coast Conference, Jim Phillips, will be here in the basement to visit with us. And Eric McLean helps us put a bow on a week of championship preparation coming up about 9:30.
Don't forget about the head coach of Virginia Tech.
The head coach of the Virginia Tech Hokies we will hear from at 9:45 this morning. So we're looking forward to that. So,
and just for the record, we interviewed him. We interviewed him after
8:45. Sorry, 8:45.
You're going to get it. Eventually, you're going to figure this out. You're part of the family.
I am family. Yes.
We interviewed Coach Pry yesterday after the press conference,
right.
And so you will get our version.
Mm-hmm.
Engaging. I think Virginia Tech fans are going to be excited. And again, it's all about winning, man.
Yep.
And that's how it works. You can give me all the dog and pony, but get the W's, everybody be good.
We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guests.
That works for me.
Is that the biggest show we've had?
I have no earthly idea.
I mean, outside of one of those tip-off, kick-off type things?
It's up there. But you know what? There was huge news yesterday afternoon.
Holy smokes, a thunderbolt.
Sitting here in the middle of the afternoon radio show, Wes, and it's just like, what? What? It's coming out of Charlottesville. I mean, the Hokies just announced their new coach, and now the University of Virginia is looking for a new head coach. This one was out of the blue.
Yeah, no question about it. Bronco Mendenhall stepping down at the conclusion of this season, which will be his sixth, 36-38 at Virginia, 2019 Coastal Division Championship, first New Year's Six bowl appearance. When they went to the Orange Bowl, they were 6-6 this year. And you pointed out earlier this week, since late October, have not been able to post a win.
October 23rd, last time they won a game. But I'll just say this, too. Bronco has been great with us.
Mm-hmm.
Not good.
Absolutely.
Great. He is an incredibly insightful guy. When you have an interview with Bronco, you'll learn something, mm-hmm. right? And I'm not even talking about football. I mean, he is a deep thinker. Folks always thought, man, it was a strange hire anyhow. I mean, he's coming from BYU. What does he know about the league?
Right.
And I always thought that he did a great job going, hey, let me build this thing from the ground up. And, you know, Virginia didn't want him to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Carla Williams, the president, everybody else was like, are you sure? This was Bronco's call.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't have a chance to watch it live because I was doing radio, but going back and reading the transcript, it sounds like this is a guy that just took inventory on life, which he does each and every year. All of us should. And said, you know what? I've been doing this, and football's been great, and I love it, and this is not a retirement party, mm-hmm. but I just need some time for me and my wife and family, and just kind of reconnect. And then really, that's the most important thing in life anyhow, is your family. So good for Bronco that he's able to at least take a step back, take inventory. That's what he needs to do. That's what he needs to do. I mean, we just unleashed a new mental health initiative this week with the Alliance, and I think everybody watching and listening to this show, quite frankly, you should take some inventory and understand what makes you happy. You know, it's not about the almighty dollar at all times. I mean, you try to make as much money as you can, but you got to do what you've got to do. And it sounds like that's exactly what Bronco Mendenhall did.
Well, the question that that came up the most, and he started with this and had to reset it a couple different times, is why now does Bronco Mendenhall resign?
So it's 31 years of straight football, and my wife and I will have been married 25 years in March. All we've known together is the rhythm of a football season. It's all my kids have known, and this January, all three will be gone, and Holly and I are empty nesters. And all they've known is the rhythm and cycle of football. And we know what that looks like really, really well. And I would love to say there's been this buildup and a long amount of epiphanies and thought, but clearly this week there was a sense of clarity to me that I needed to step back from college football and reassess, renew, reframe, and reinvent with my wife as a partner our future and the next chapter of our lives. I was requested to stay by our athletic director. I was requested to stay by our president. It's my decision only. And Holly, my wife's a little stunned and shocked too, still. But I believe a renewal and a pause and a reframing and a reinventing and a reconnecting is necessary to then become the very best person I can be moving forward. And as you know, my passion and my wife's passion, we love to teach and inspire and build people, young people especially. And I know what that takes. And I'm looking forward to, again, the chance to renew and reflect and reinvent and re-become and then re-enter someplace at some time on rocket fuel to become even a better version of maybe who I currently am.
A couple thoughts here. One, many know who follow the ACC. Bronco Mendenhall is of the Mormon faith. He has three sons. He was with us the last time I think he was with us. It was actually he had an open date. It was a faith-based weekend trip. He was with his son who was getting ready to leave the last one on the mission trip for the Mormon Church. He is as deep a thinker off of football as any football coach I've ever been around. He is a well-read, incredibly well-read guy as a human being. And then you combine it with the fact that he oftentimes reads to connect with young people. It's a magic combination, and that's what makes his program maybe just a little bit different than the others. That being said, when he started explaining this yesterday, Mark, all of it made sense. You know, the way he explains it, it makes sense. He's come to a time where he's made a decision that he feels like it's time to step away. And I get it. I get it from Bronco Mendenhall's standpoint because we've been fortunate enough to visit with him so many times. Are we going to miss him? Absolutely. I think Virginia will miss him, but they'll find a good football coach. But I'm glad that he and Holly, his wife, have been able to kind of sort this out in due time and feel a lot of clarity about their decision. At least he does.
It couldn't have been easy, right?
No.
I mean, you could just, if you're reading between the lines, if you watch that video, if you're watching us as opposed to listening to us on radio, you can see how difficult that was to reach that point. Because, you know, when you're a football coach, there's demands. Yeah, there's a lot of money all that stuff. Sure. We know that. But, you know, really part of it is your influencing of young people.
Right.
And when you walk away, it's not just you, your family, and your immediate family. It's the 85 scholarships. It's the staff. It's everything.
Correct.
And so that is a difficult thing to do when you're in your prime. Mm-hmm. And I give them all the respect in the world on that, because that could not have been easy. But, you know, like I said earlier, the ACC, the Alliance, just unveiled this mental health initiative.
Right.
You know, you go through the grind, the pressures to win. Yeah, the money's great and all that stuff, but at what cost, mm-hmm. right? At what cost? And I do think the shelf life of football coaches is going to start getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
I'm with you on that.
You see a guy like Mike Krzyzewski, who's, you know, his 42nd year at Duke with men's basketball, and this is his, you know, swan song. Man, enjoy it. You know, we saw that with Coach Martin down there at Florida State with baseball. Bobby Bowden, when he was running his show. I mean, you know, embrace the guys that have gone through the grinds of 3 and 4 and possibly 5 decades of doing their thing. It's tough.
Yep.
And the pressures and the demands, I can totally see guys being burned out and going, hey, listen, I need to take a step back. Let me take inventory of what's really important in my life. So good for Bronco and his wife, his kids. And again, like you said, he's not retiring. He's just kind of getting a refocus. And to be able to do that, it could not have been easy. But as you pointed out, West Virginia will find a good football coach.
Yeah, and Carla Williams and that group are starting on that process right now. Let's look at what Bronco Mendenhall accomplished in 6 seasons. We already told you there was precedent setting. First ever trip to a BCS New Year's Six Bowl. First ever ACC division title. Had a 9-plus win season. That's the 7th time that's happened in school history, and it ended a 15-year losing streak to Virginia Tech in 2019. Now, we'll talk with David Teal about this when he joins us at 8:30 this morning. There is some interesting timing of this for Virginia. The signing day stuff aside, there is a master plan for athletics, a football facilities building. There's a lot of physical plant issues at the University of Virginia surrounding football. Where does that stand? We'll talk to David Teal to get the latest on that and the Cavaliers' footprint as well. But let me say this just on a personal note. I have thoroughly enjoyed getting to know Bronco Mendenhall. He is a delightful man, and I think one that's well-respected in the coaching industry. He's been, as Mark said, he's been awfully kind to us on this program. We will miss him in the ACC. He's a good football coach and a good person to have, but certainly looking forward to seeing what Carla Williams does.
Yep, we'll get into that with David Teal. And, of course, now you got the Duke job open, the Virginia job open, the Miami AD job open,
right.
The Florida State situation with their athletic director. And that's going to be
David Coburn retiring, right.
Right, so there's some Wes, I got to tell you, I don't know if I've seen a crazier week in college sports since I've been alive than this week. And I'm not talking about games. I'm not talking about the very first game. Mm-hmm. But between the coaches, the ADs, the suddenness, the seismic shifts of one major guy going to another major school. I've never seen a week like this in college athletics, ever, ever.
There we go.
It's been amazing.
All right. When we continue, we move on here. Pitt and Wake carry the ball tomorrow night in the Subway ACC Championship. We will touch on that. First, though, how about a quick check? Women's ACC Big Ten Challenge last night.
Excellent.
Yep. Wes Moore goes on the road to Indiana, beats the Hoosiers last night, 66-58. Let's see. Duke was a winner at home. Nice win for Kara Lawson, huh?
3 top 12 wins last night.
You betcha.
The women take care of business. They win the challenge 10-4. They did what the men couldn't do.
That
is close and dominate.
Yep.
And so good for the ladies, man. And NC State sitting in that number 2 spot. Got a little revenge against Indiana last night on the road.
Yep. Jeff Walls, a 22-point winner, by the way, at home last night over Michigan. Congratulations as well to Notre Dame, Florida State on wins as well in the ACC Big Ten Women's Basketball Champion. Don't forget Sunday afternoon, Women's Hoops, better than ever on ACC Network. High noon, the Bruins of Belmont are at the Yum Center to see Coach Walls. Chester's favorite player, Haley Van Lith, and number 10,
she was
Louisville.
Good last night, man. Haley was lighting it up last night.
And then at 2 o'clock, number 11, Tennessee, visits Blacksburg to see Kenny Brooks, Elizabeth Kitley, and the rest of the Virginia Tech Hokies. All that coming up Sunday, ACC Women's Hoops, double dip right here on ACCN, streaming live on the ESPN app. One app, one tap. When we come back, we've talked offense all week, but does defense really win championships? A few numbers to pass your way before they kick it at Bank of America Stadium tomorrow night in Charlotte. Next on Friday's Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham and
look,
guest.
Look at here.
Tell you what, you tell the guy 7:30, a Wake Forest man shows up early. 7:30's late. Don't you mess around, man. It's all about the Demon Deeks. John Curry, welcome to the basement.
It really is in the basement.
Here, talk
I mean, this really is in the basement. And Dave Clausen would say this is Deacon time, so I did get here early.
Yeah, there you go.
And nice. Fortunately, we got great roads here in North Carolina, so just great sit right roads. Down.
From more, what's promotion of North Carolina Department of Transportation already. We got that done.
Those guys have done a good job.
They have done a great job.
I knew that we were in good shape when you had a Smokey and the Bandit reference on the text this morning. I said, Curry's making good time. He's making good time.
We did.
Yeah.
How you been, man? This is going to be awesome, right?
It's a great day for Wake Forest. Great weekend for Wake Forest. We got 25 busloads of Wake Forest students coming down tomorrow.
25.
We got 3,500 students. So they were studying hard last night because exams are next week. But they're all coming down for this game tomorrow night.
And hasn't it been amazing? We've talked about it, about the, again, small enrollment. But, man, the percentage of students that are showing up for game day off the charts. It's crazy. Everybody just died. I mean, hey, we're in. Let's go.
Well, you got a great engagement, and part of the advantage of being a relatively smaller school compared to some of the people we compete against is you've got a great intimacy. People know each other. You know, Coach Clausen loves to talk about the fact that our football student athletes, the freshmen, they live in Maya Angelou dorm. They can roll right across the street to where our football complex is at that beautiful new Sutton Sports Performance Center. So it is a really special place, great faculty, and great leadership from our president, Susan Winty.
John, when I think of this season, and we talked about turning points the other day. Where's your turning point in this season as the athletic director? I mean, because there's so many things. The wins and losses, moments in the game are one thing. But there's so much momentum. I mean, I've heard from a half dozen Wake Forest football players this week in one form or another. Where's your turning point for this season?
Well, Coach Clausen really talks about that game at Virginia.
Right.
Really, really good Virginia team going to Charlottesville, and we played so well on that Friday night. You know, as athletics director, I'm looking at the first game, you know, the first series, the first crowd. Do we get the people through the scanners and all that kind of stuff? And so there's been a number of moments where the team rallied. And perhaps the thing that I'm most impressed with, that is most reflective of the culture and the spirit that Coach Clausen has built, is we had two pretty disappointing losses down the stretch. Mm-hmm. You know, losing at Chapel Hill when we really had the game in control, then we lost control of it. But we came back the next week and had a great win in one of the most magical scenes we've ever had at Truist Field. And then we had a disappointing outing in Clemson. Mm-hmm. And we came back at Boston College. And you could say there was a lot of pressure on the Deacs in Chestnut Hill. And to play that well and perform and really put the game, and you know, we had that 8-minute drive at the end of the fourth quarter to run out the clock, which was just vintage stuff. Those are two signs to me of a great culture and a great leadership from the team and from the coaching staff.
And because of that, Mr. Clausen got a nice little extension. I know that was a win-win for all parties involved.
Well, Dave Clausen is a perfect fit for Wake Forest, Mark, and we're really fortunate that our president, Susan Winty, and our board recognize that in a time of great instability in college athletics, you know, this is perhaps the most instable time and uncertain time in the history of the enterprise, which is saying something, right?
That is.
So when you have times of uncertainty and instability, having a solid leadership and continuity is really, really important. And so now I believe, I don't think there was ever any question that was going to happen, but we were able to accelerate a little bit, get it done, and now you have uncertainty around the country, and Wake Forest is poised to take advantage of that, right? So we're really fortunate. This football team has some good players who transferred into Wake Forest, graduate students who transferred to Wake Forest, and maybe over the next few weeks there's an opportunity to further augment the roster for next year to plug some of these holes we'll have with some of these great fifth and sixth year players who will graduate.
John, take us through, if you can, and we'll talk about the landscape of football and all the nuances because Jim Phillips will be here in the 9 o'clock hour. And I know that's a broader stroke from a national perspective. But the football enterprise as a whole, I mean, the experience, we just saw clips of the NC State night, I mean, at Truist Field. That's a phenomenal environment. The city has embraced it. The triad has embraced it. All those little things that Wake Forest kind of hopes to get have now all come together. You feel like that's maximized it during the course of this season?
Well, I'm not sure we've maximized it yet,
right?
But we're certainly building towards that. When we talk about having a world-class student-athlete experience, we talk about having the best fan experience in the state of North Carolina.
Right.
You know, one of our advantages, if you're a fan, we don't have 100,000 people at our game, so you don't have to wait in line with 100,000 people to go to the bathroom, get something to eat or drink, or get into the parking lots.
Yeah.
And even coming to Charlotte tomorrow, we raced through. You know, Coach Clausen made a couple funny comments about that, but we raced through our ticket allotment on Sunday. We got more tickets and raced through those on Monday, and so we'll have an incredible scene here. But Charlotte's already a Wake Forest town. You know, we're the only ACC school with a campus in Charlotte. With our partnership with Atrium, we're opening a medical school campus here in Charlotte next year, and our School of Professional Studies will have their first cohort of master's students starting in January. So this just fits well with our whole institutional goals and focus.
You know, I've always found, too, though, when you have a season like this, regardless of outcome tomorrow night, there's a trickle-down effect. I don't think you're going to really feel it for another year or two down the road, because I've seen this now at so many different schools where all of a sudden the football program takes off. You win a championship, you're in those kind of games, enrollment, people say, hey, you know what, I've never thought about maybe Wake Forest or whatever, fill in the blank with whatever school. It's normally about a two-year wave where this, you really start feeling the impact of a season like this.
Well, Mark, what I'd say is that football is helping shine a light on all the other things that Wake Forest has already done so well through the years. And I mentioned President Winty and her leadership coming on board in July and building on the legacy that Nathan Hatch and Dr. Hearn have before him. And just like I've tried to pick up the rope from from Ron Wellman and Dr. Hooks. But thinking about, you know, where this football program is, this is our sixth consecutive bowl season. North Carolina, Wake Forest has the best record against the Big Four schools in the 21st century. And a lot of people don't know those things. And so this moment in time really shines a light on that. From an application standpoint, you know, we're a top 30 university. Our applications were way up last year. They're way ahead this year. You know, it's a tough place to get into. You know, I couldn't get into Wake Forest anymore.
Oh yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I think you could.
No. That would be. You know what? Here's what would happen. You know, Billy Packer, you're out.
No, we're all about Coach Packer. We're gonna get him back one of these days, sooner or later. We'll work on it. Can we work on that?
There you go. All right. Good luck with that.
This thing with Dave Clausen, and you've probably seen the show enough to know that I talk about the patience and the development and the processing. And I had a chance to see Ron Wellman a week or so ago in Greensboro. And I said to him, wow, you know, what you saw in the coach at Bowling Green when you're trying to find the right fit behind, as you know, one of the great gentlemen of football in Jim Grobe, and he found the right fit. Okay, you've worked at several campuses. You've been the AD at Power Five schools. Why does this fit work so well at Wake Forest in a landscape that you just said earlier can be a little volatile at times? The fit comes in and it might go for a year or two and then things start sliding off the rails. Why does Dave Clausen work at Wake Forest in your mind, not as the AD at Wake Forest, but as an athletic administrator?
Well, first of all, as I said before, Dave Clausen could be successful anywhere.
Right.
And, you know, he's one of the elite coaches in the country, in my opinion. I'm very glad he chooses to be elite at Wake Forest. I do want to offer you one bit of correction. Right?
Okay.
You used the word patient.
Yeah.
In relation to Dave Clausen.
Yeah.
Dave Clausen's not very patient. He has high expectations. He's very competitive. And he's really raised the standard of excellence for everyone around him and really throughout the athletics program at Wake Forest. And so if you look at the rest of our athletics program, we've had great success. We have some really generationally elite coaches like Bobby Muse, our men's soccer coach, or Kim Llewellyn, our women's golf coach. You know, Coach Clausen's values fit Wake Forest. He certainly understands how important education is. And he appreciates the advantages that we have. You know, there's some advantages that we don't have, right? Mm-hmm. But we really maximize the advantages we do have. And as a result, our program is successful.
Before we go to break, I noticed that it wasn't sugar cake from Raven Sugar Cake there from Old
Salem. No, I got you plenty the other night.
It wasn't Krispy Kreme.
No, I got you plenty of that,
part of the Winston-Salem tradition. You did walk in with gifts, though, because it may be the first time you've conducted an interview with a 60-pound Labrador sitting between us.
I do want both the dogs were very aggressive in protecting the house when I walked up.
You must, and we've said this from day one on the show, you must pass the sniff test. I don't care how many wins, I don't care how many championships, I don't care what your SAT score is, your graduation rate. If you don't pass the sniff test, you don't get in the basement. Well, so you've come this far.
I think I have to credit Chase and Charlie, you know, our King Charles Cavalier Spaniels for that. But we do have a little delivery.
Yeah. Okay.
We did launch this year. It was a good year to launch from R&D Brewery. We did launch Deacon Brew. All right. So we got some Deacon Brew for both of you guys. And the good thing is this has a lot less calories than that sugar cake.
Well, I'm not worried about calories. You can't keep this
going. There we go.
Look
at this. Deacon Brew.
Really?
And nothing better than a tailgate with a little Deacon Brew.
Ice cold Deacon Brew.
I tell you what, we are living right. I'm glad you're going to hang out with us for a little bit.
I'll be here all day.
Okay. Yeah. All day. Okay.
Until 10. I'll be here in Charlotte.
Okay. Well, very good.
Yeah, because we're getting ready to put you to work.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say. All right, sit tight. On the other side, more with John Curry. Don't forget, 8 o'clock, his colleague Heather Leich will join us as Pitt is also here to meet Wake Forest. Look at Packer. Are you?
Got to promote.
Yeah. There's Jen Hoover. Jen Hoover, by the way, sent us the Krispy Kremes and some sugar cake along with three other folks who brought me packages the other night at Joel Coliseum. We'll talk about Steve Forbes, too, when we continue. Packer and Durham with John Curry. We're live in Charlotte on the eve of the Subway ACC Football Championship.
Packer and Durham. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Really? Come on.
Long way to go and a short time to get there.
My heavens. John Curry comes with his own fight song.
I tell you what, that song right there is one of those songs.
Yeah.
It's like Rocky Top, yep. John, as you well know. It gets in your head and you can't get rid of it for about 2 days. That's that song right there.
Athletics director at Wake Forest is here with us in this first hour of the show. It's a busy show. Lots of busy things. The commissioner will be here at 9 o'clock. David Teal, the 8 o'clock hour. Eric McClain, it's a cast of thousands, as Packer likes to say, from time to time. All right, tomorrow night, all the people show up. It's a great branding opportunity. It's a great event for Wake Forest. What else ties into it that's not obvious to fans, media, elsewise? You're in Charlotte, and you're here at 7:30. So I'm going to guess that today there's some athletic business that can take place, development, all the things that tie in to singular moments like this, right?
Sure. I mean, we'll go by and see some good friends. I got an appointment at 9 o'clock and with
Wait
the great.
You have to cancel that. The show goes till 10.
Well, I mean, you got Commissioner Phillips, and he's a lot smarter, better looking, intelligent than me.
We got extra chairs. You know, don't try to get out. I mean, just because you brought us beer doesn't mean you get out early. So. Got to roll up your sleeves
I want to slide out in case Wes wants to put a little Deacon Brew in his coffee cup. You know,
you ain't gonna worry about that.
but it is this bigger moment. Right?
Sure,
at times? Yeah.
Sure. Well, we talked about it earlier. I mean, it's a galvanizing moment for the entire community. And as Wake Forest continues to expand its presence in Charlotte, it really fits that. You know, our president will be here tomorrow. We'll have a nice brunch tomorrow morning with our board and some of our key contributors. And then I think we have 2,000 or 3,000 fans that will be at the convention center for the official pregame tailgate. And I've seen all kinds of social media about unofficial tailgates across. I know our former football players are all getting together to do one. We'll have those 3,500 students at a tailgate outside of Bank of America Stadium. And, you know, a lot of logistics go into all this. Certainly our student life, you know, is planning for that. There is one interesting story. So we have a gospel choir at Wake Forest that Dean Jonathan Walton has put together over the last couple of years. And the gospel choir has rehearsal Saturday afternoon. And they were up in arms because the buses are leaving like at 1:30. And so we did have one bus that's going to stay behind, and there's going to be a late express of the Wake Forest Gospel Choir rolling in to Bank of America Stadium because they do have to get ready for the traditional Moravian Love Feast, which happens on Sunday night in Wake Chapel.
There you go.
You can't leave the choir at home, John.
The choir's coming.
You can forget our 6-pack or 12-pack, but you can't leave the choir at home.
We got the choir coming.
All right. By the way, what do a championship mean for Wake? I mean, I know you want to dream a little bit and all that stuff, but for argument's sake, Wake wins the game Saturday night. What does that mean moving forward?
Well, from a building block of building a great program, it's another significant building block step. And certainly as the ACC champion, the ACC champion is going on to a New Year's Six bowl game, you know, probably the Peach Bowl or the Fiesta Bowl. Mm-hmm. So those are great opportunities, again, for the institution to continue to grow. But one of the best things about college athletics that we all love and that we all miss so much during the pandemic was just the fact that it brings everybody together.
Yep.
And so you got Wake Forest people from all over. You got parents. You got alums. You got, I was talking to Riley Skinner. He's landing at 12:30 tomorrow coming into town.
That's about right.
You know, so it just brings people together in a way that just few other things do. And so that's perhaps the most special thing about it all.
It is a generational moment for a football program that has had moments, some. Not as many as they'd want. But it is fascinating to hear from all those different guys. And here's the other thing. I mean, I was there Tuesday night for basketball. It's infected that area. It's crossed over into, here's another guy, second year, Steve Forbes, building the program. Everybody's got momentum. And you're right when you say it creates the momentum in the department. Every sport, I got to believe.
Absolutely. You know, Coach Forbes, after that great overtime victory over Northwestern on Tuesday night, which ended at like 2 a.m. or something. I thought it was pretty late, right?
Yeah.
You know, Coach Forbes talked about it in the locker room because our men's team plays at Virginia Tech tomorrow at 2
right.
o'clock. And so he talked about it in the locker room. We're going to win this game at 2 o'clock, and our football team's going to win the ACC championship at 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And our women's basketball team is 7-1. Our men's basketball team is 7-1. Both those teams are off to great starts.
By the way, I mentioned before you walked in to the basement, of all the years I've been alive, I've never seen a week in college athletics like this one. And I'm not even talking about a game. I'm not even talking about a championship game. I'm not talking about any of that stuff. Are we going down a slippery path here? I mean, you've been living this life for a long time too. But, I mean, this has been as crazy a week as I can ever remember as far as big-time names going to big-time programs, the early signing period. There's a pressure on every athletic department. If you're going to make a change, it may not be nice. It may not be pleasant. We got to make a move. Where are we going? Big picture.
Well, the early signing date started in 2017,
mm-hmm.
and I experienced, you know, some of the effects of that in 2017 because it really changed the acceleration to get your staff turned over, get your new staff turned in place. You know, now you have, it used to be if a head coach took a job at this time of year, the head coach would probably go to the next program, but the whole staff would stay behind. And I've heard from friends in the coaching profession now that, you know, there's schools that are going to bowl games, but they have two or three coaches and a couple GAs because all the other coaches have gone on to the next program. So I don't believe that's good. It's certainly not good for the student athletes who are maybe playing in their last ever game,
right.
Et cetera. I don't have the right answer on how to alleviate that problem, but it creates a, you know, a really unfortunate scene.
Does it start though with that, John? I mean, should an early signing date be moved or at least reconsidered because of all of this? Because it puts unbelievable strain on athletic departments.
Well, you know, every rule that we have in college athletics, you know, was well intended when it started, but all of them come with unintended consequences. And when we talk about rule changes and rule evolving, the unintended consequences often don't become apparent until after the change, and that is certainly part of it. The portability of student athletes, which I believe in, student athletes have the ability to transfer when they want to, et cetera. But that also plays a factor because I mentioned it earlier, the market, if you will, of instability with programs changing right now means that there are opportunities for student athletes to find new homes and in turn for coaches of programs to find student athletes that might plug holes for them. And all that creates part of that pressure.
But John, that's the new world. And see, I you're right about unintended consequences. I think the one thing that's come back to us and the thing I think Mark and I are asked, and I'm sure you are by your fans, is why, how, all the tenets that we thought were possible are now happening at hyperspeed. And that's the issue. Then you have to go back and adjust, right? You got to find a way to go back and say, okay, maybe we push signing day another week. Maybe we don't have it in December. But then again, there's so many other elements involved. You mentioned the student athlete. The power of the student athlete is a fascinating thing right now. I've heard a half dozen coaches, if I've heard one, say, I got to re-recruit people. You find that to be concerning for your current coaches?
Actually, I think it rewards coaches who do things the right way.
Okay.
And it rewards coaches who are genuinely invested in their students, okay, or their student athletes. You know, we should think of ourselves as educators. We still tie this thing to higher education. And so it, to me, it rewards student coaches and coaching staffs and mm-hmm. universities who are truly invested in the holistic student athlete and supporting their students, right? So I look at Dave Clawson, and Dave Clawson spends a lot of time. He probably spends more time today on interpersonal relationships with his student athletes that he did 10 years ago. I think he's always done it as much as anybody, but right, he probably does it more than he's ever done it. And so if coaches talk about it as re-recruiting their student athletes, I would like to think that coaches are always engaged in relationships with their student athletes mm-hmm. as mentors and counselors and coaches. And so another part of this is that sometimes fans understandably with frustrations with our team didn't win as many games, or right, we lost this game, or we lost all these close games, or we won, whatever it is. As my father used to say, there's no problem you can't make worse by operating. Right. So when you're going to make a change,
right,
you better be sure that you have the ability to upgrade your program, because the cost of that instability now is greater than it's ever been before.
Yeah.
So what I hope is that this will enable athletics directors and presidents and boards to understand that just because we lost a couple close games and our record is 5-7 instead of 7-5 or sure, or 8-4 instead of 10-2 doesn't mean we need to, you know, pull the trigger and uproot this entire program, because that's what you're doing when you're making a change. Now, sometimes it's absolutely the right thing for everybody involved to make a change, but you better be sure. And as you look out there, the pool of people who are qualified and proven to do these jobs is not a very big pool, right? And so we all talk about how much money coaches make and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But the skill set to be a successful college football coach does not just fall off a truck, right? It takes a really unique blend of intelligence, organization, savviness, a little bit of a Q factor. You got to be able to stand in front of a microphone and all right, that kind of stuff. It takes a really unique blend. And with great respect to our NFL friends, a college head football coaching job is infinitely more complex than an NFL job.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the sheer number of players you're managing, you know, 125 players on our football team at Wake Forest, but then also the size of the staff and all the things that different people in a front office do that a head coach in college has to do, that in pros, that there's a whole different department doing all this different stuff. And so these are really complex jobs, and finding someone who's experienced in doing the job is harder than maybe it looks. And the other part about it is head coaches have probably lost a game at some point in their career. Every head coach with any kind of experience has probably lost a game, or probably, you know, bungled the clock management at the end. Or so head coaches have a record which probably has some losses on it. Therefore, from a fan perspective, if you're launching a new coach, if that coach has some blemishes, then some fans may react negatively. Well, they lost that particular game, or their record is 500 overall, or whatever it is, right? Assistant coaches have never lost a game. Mm-hmm. They're undefeated. So there's not as much stuff to pick on. So it's really easy to think about a head coach that you might be looking at's problems, when the only reason that head coach has a record that includes some losses is that head coach has what? Experience. And that head coach has scar tissue, and that head coach has called a bunch of timeouts and gone back and evaluated what they did and didn't do. So you take Steve Forbes, for instance, our head basketball coach. That guy's cut a lot of timeouts.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd be the first to tell you that calling a timeout at Barton County Community College was at the wrong time doesn't have near the consequences negatively of calling a timeout at the wrong time in the ACC, right? So he's had a chance to develop that. And Dave Clawson's the same way, to be experienced, which is not to say that an assistant coach can't be a great head coach. It's just a different paradigm.
Before we get you out of town here and get back to real work, has there been one request this week that you got from, I don't know, could be a celeb, could be a long-lost alum that we haven't heard from in a long time that said, hey, man, John, I could use 2 on the 50 or 4. I mean, there's always that one.
I'm
crazy,
willing to pay, but I need 4 good ones. How's
always,
that?
There's always a text or a call from somebody you haven't heard in 100 years. You go, well, man, well, who would have ever thunk?
Yeah.
We get to the ACC championship game and I hear from, did you get one of those this week?
I've gotten a couple notes from some old friends, but I can't say that I've gotten anything
nothing
out
drastic
of line. I do want to give a shout out to one of our biggest fans,
okay,
Larry Russell. quarterback on a 1970 ACC team.
Sure.
Larry has probably come to every game this year. You know, we played a home game for him last week at Boston College, and so Larry would probably like to sing the national anthem or something like that, and he'd probably do it well, but
Hang out with the choir. Take the last bus down to town.
Yeah.
But we're really fortunate. I mean, this is it's hard to be in this game. Wake Forest has been in this game before in 2006. You know, we won an ACC championship this century. Those are hard things to do. So to be in this position and have this opportunity is a real credit to our entire program.
You know, speaking of Larry Russell, I think of Dr. Hopkins, who passed away earlier this year, who was tied in those great, 1970 run and so forth. And he's probably looking down with a smile on his face, don't you think?
Dr. Hopkins is definitely looking down with a smile on her face, and his wife, Beth Hopkins, will be at the game tomorrow. And Beth is an incredible lady, an incredible trailblazer in her own right. And she's a member of our board of trustees, and she'll be there cheering.
He was so great for the school in every sense of the word. Represented exactly what you want from a Wake Forest guy.
Larry Hopkins was great for the school, and he was great for healthcare in Winston-Salem.
All right, sit tight. You can say one more. Can you stay one more second?
As long until you kick me out.
Well, you got a 9 o'clock.
Yeah, we know
there's a real appointment at 9.
It's close by.
Okay, good. All right. Well, we're going to stay one more segment because John Curry and I never met until a few years ago, but our fathers were friends, and you've never heard this story, have you?
No, and I've got a Curry story, too. He was mad at me at Kansas State.
Well, we're going to tell that story, too. John Curry and I are going to share a story about the 1981 National Championship game at the Spectrum in Philadelphia when we come back.
There you go.
We're going to do that. We'll tie all this together when we continue. John Curry with us. Packer and Durham's Friday continues in a moment on ACCN with the director of – there's the strutting deacon. Back after this.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
And our partnership with the V Foundation highlights the urgent need for cancer research and the elimination of racial disparities in cancer outcomes. You can learn more and help support by visiting v.org/donate. 100% of your donation goes directly to cancer research. And we continue on a Friday. John Curry is here. Ironic, we talk about V Week and cancer research. Our dads became friends in the late 70s, early 80s. My grandmother, my dad's mom, was diagnosed with cancer, ultimately passed away in 1984. But John's dad was my grandmother's cancer doctor at UNC Hospital in Chapel Hill. And Dr. Curry, who I knew Dr. Curry growing up, had no idea it was John's dad until we connected, 5-6 years ago, right, for the first time. So there is a story that would never happen today. Mm-hmm. Fair?
Fair enough.
So you want to pick it up? 1981, Spectrum in Philadelphia.
1981, my dad was late, as always, and he got to the game, the national championship game, and his buddies that he was meeting had already sold his ticket because they just thought he wasn't going to show up. And so he sent a note via one of the ushers down
at
to Woody.
At the Spectrum,
down to Woody. And Woody sent him his press pass.
My dad took off his press pass at the Spectrum, gave it to the usher, and that's how John Curry's dad got in the Spectrum to watch Isaiah Thomas and Indiana beat Carolina.
How about that?
True story.
That's a great story.
I wish I still had it.
I do, too.
I don't know where it happened.
I mean, I've got several of his credentials. I've got most of the 82 and the 93 credentials that he had the national championship run, but I'd love to have the 81 credential would be hilarious. Just it's an unbelievable story.
The first time I met this guy, he was running the show at Kansas State
and mad at you.
Here's what happened. And I knew it, John, because I'd read about him, but we had never met. And we did these things at SiriusXM called camp tours. So right before the season, we'd go travel all over the country. And it was great because you had a chance to meet coaches, ADs, players, you see facilities and everything else. So we were going through one of our crazy trips of Lincoln, Nebraska to Manhattan, Kansas to Stillwater. I mean, we're driving all over the country like madmen. And so I'd never been to Manhattan, Kansas. And so we're out in the middle of nowhere. You drive from Lincoln to Manhattan. And I'm telling you, you go for hours, you're like, I always told somebody, if I ever robbed a bank, I'm going to come here. They'd never find me. I mean, I'm just out in the middle of nowhere. So we get to Manhattan. It's a beautiful little town, great college town. And we go over to the stadium, and you guys are going through this great new construction, which was really beautiful. And so I'm walking through. They gave us, you know, the vest to wear and a hat. And I, you know, forget the hat. I'm just walking around here. And I had not met John yet. And so we're walking through the construction site. I got my goofy little vest on. I got the hat underneath my arm. And this guy comes up and goes, "Hey, you!" And he points. It's John. And I don't know who John is. And he points at me and goes, "Put your hat on." And I'm like, "Who is this guy?" And then this guy walks up. He goes, "I'm John Curry, director of athletics." I was I'm sorry, my boss man.
Put my hat on.
Put my
boss,
hat on.
We got to be safe. That's John, one of our principles.
Rule breaker.
We got to be
rule
safe.
Rule breaker.
Got to be safe.
I didn't want to try to break a rule. I just didn't want to wear the construction hat.
It's part of the rules.
But, man, you know, that's the first time we ever met. And, man, now look at you. You're in the basement with dogs.
Delivering beer.
You've come full circle, Mr. Curry.
No question. No question.
Big time. Congratulations on a great year.
Thank you.
Looking forward to tomorrow night. I know you're excited just for the moment for Wake Forest as much as anything, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It'll be a special time, and we really appreciate you guys and everything you've done to continue to tell the ACC football story. You know, we got a really good football league. This is going to be an awesome game tomorrow night with two incredible quarterbacks, and you know, it'll be the one that's turning the dial.
Give me 90 seconds or 30 seconds on you've been a part of leagues where football's emerged. Mm-hmm. This looks like it's the upslope. I mean, we saw the quarterback play in 16. We've seen it again in 21. But to have all those teams, maybe not one in the Final Four, but to have all these teams, that says something, right? You sit in that room. You guys talk as colleagues, right?
Yeah, it's really good depth. And, you know, that we were talking earlier offset, that the academic reputation of a university is often 10 years behind reality. And I think it's the same thing with athletic programs. And, you know, we've worked through that. At Wake Forest, you know, getting people to understand that this is an emerging athletics program and a football program that has the opportunity to compete for championships. And so it's great to see the emphasis. Commissioner Phillips' 24/7 ACC football initiative is really important.
Yeah.
And continuing to tell that story. And we're going to have a great – it looks like the weather's going to be awesome tomorrow.
Yeah.
It is going to be a great day for college football and for Charlotte and the Atlantic Coast Conference.
Super.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for making the effort.
Thank you.
I will say this. The Demon Deacon was here like 18 months ahead of you, but you're getting it.
Right. Well, I'm going to go by and see my mom. She's like two blocks away.
There you go.
So, mom, right. I'm coming to see you now.
There we go. All right, John Curry, stay tuned. Heather Light from Pittsburgh joins us as hour two of Packer and Durham's Friday continues right here on ACC Network. We get a look at not only football, but Heather noted yesterday in a message to her constituency, this is an interesting time for a lot of sports and success in Pittsburgh. We'll talk to Heather next, right after this on ACC.
Packer and Durham.